certainly a unique time to be alive, one where information has never been so readily available, and yet there seems to be a lot of misinformation, and there seems to be a lot of confusion. And I would say having true, genuine curiosity is one of the best ways to navigate the world that we live in right now.
Hello and welcome to The Journey, your radio show, hosted by Neville D'Angelou, author of A Soundbite Life and Flight of the Fused Monkeys, a PRG Emerging Technologies Forum keynote speaker and founder of Rio Sports. I am Joseph Ellison. Enjoy!
How do you retain relevance and vitality and sustain progress in a complicated, noisy world? Neuroscientist Professor Amisha Jha coined an apt acronym for the environment we live in, VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. So how do you succeed in such an environment? What actions, what behaviors, what core values keep you from being mired in the chaos, as well as sustain your mobility away from collective and self-generated crises? What mentality bolsters you as you confront the challenges and demands of whatever progress you're seeking, that gives you peace, that gives you joy, that keeps your imagination awake to the possibilities of your work and of your dreams and of your desires? Our guest is Sean Zaidi, president of NGV Global Group. He's a multi-hyphenate with deep roots in the technology, transportation, and real estate spaces. His civic leadership is across many organizations in support of the well-being and sustainability of our communities. And of course, he is as well a valued member of our academy. As a triple major of Southern Methodist University, he holds a BS in Management Science, a BBA in Financial Consulting, a BA in Economics, a Master's in Operations Research, and from the University of Texas, Austin, an MBA in Management. I've wanted to have him on our podcast for some while now. For a man in such demand, I'm delighted he has privileged us with his time, expertise, and wisdom. Sean, thanks for joining us on the journey.
Neville, I'm happy to be here.
Could we start by you just giving us a little bit about yourself? I know that you're a multi-hyphenate. You've got lots of things going on. But talk about yourself professionally a little bit.
Sure. I'll talk coming a little bit out of school. I went to SMU for undergrad, and when I graduated, I went into management consulting, which essentially involved me working for different clients every few months in different cities, mostly domestically, but also sometimes around the world. It was a very interesting whirlwind five-year journey in management consulting, where I met a ton of fascinating people, great businesses, and I got to travel all over the world. And then after that, I went and got my MBA at the University of Texas in Austin, which was also a wonderful experience, a great learning experience. I met a lot of friends. I ended up moving to a company called Greystone, which is a real estate private equity firm, and I was there for several years working in various divisions of the company. And it was a very exciting time because it was a strong real estate market essentially for the entire time that I worked there. And then I eventually moved to my family's business about 3 years ago and took over as the president at the beginning of 2021. And what we do is we manufacture natural gas and hybrid electric powertrains for heavy-duty vehicles. And then we have two fleets of alternative fuel vehicles that we run in the hazmat and the conventional transportation space. And really, I'd like to think that we're pioneers in the field of environmentally sustainable transportation.
So why did your family start that business? You said, did you co-found it, or was the business there and then you just became president of it? Or?
So I'm president of what's called NGV Global Group. It's actually a collection of eight different businesses under one umbrella. So we do a variety of different things. We've got a technology development, research and development arm. We have two manufacturing companies, one that focuses on heavy-duty vehicles and another one that focuses on more light and medium-duty vehicles. And, of course, we have our hazardous transportation business, and we have our primary conventional logistics business that, again, all of our vehicles run on alternative fuels. So right now we've got hybrid electric vehicles, we've got natural gas and renewable natural gas vehicles, and then we actually are bringing on hydrogen and hydrogen fuel cell and hydrogen in internal combustion, as well as electric vehicles that we're testing with a number of different companies that we work with. Really, the genesis, though, is in the manufacturing side of the business, which was a business that my dad started about 15 years ago to convert light and medium-duty vehicles to run on natural gas, which is, of course, a cheaper but also a more environmentally sustainable fuel relative to gasoline and diesel, which power the majority of vehicles out there, both in the commercial and in the consumer transportation space. And really what he saw was a pretty unique market opportunity. The technology that he licensed at the time had been very prevalent in Europe and Asia and other parts of the world. And really, the natural gas infrastructure in the United States was very strong, but the transportation infrastructure was almost non-existent. And so he was able to bring some of that technology here domestically to be available, and was able to repower a number of different vehicles in a way that allowed the clients to save a lot of money, and also to cut down on their carbon footprint, which has become increasingly more important in the last 10 to 15 years, and looks like it'll become even more important with the passage of a few bills that the current administration is looking to get through.
That's awesome. What kind of people are attracted into a business like yours?
That's a good question, Neville. And I'd say that the folks who are interested in making a positive impact, and while we are a relatively small company, I like to think that we're doing our part to improve both transportation and logistics, but also to reduce the carbon footprint, which is something that everyone, I'd hope, would be involved in. It is a very large challenge. So certainly I think it would be individuals who like large challenges, who like being on the cutting edge, doing things that are new, that haven't been done before, and also who not only want to run or be part of a profitable business, but be part of a business that does something good and makes a positive impact.
Mm-hmm. And you said something that you said when you were the cutting edge. There's several things in my mind that go on there, because you're in a sense an experimental stage. Or go ahead, talk to me about that.
We are, certainly. We've got a research and development company that mm-hmm. helps develop out the technology and continue to improve it. And of course, our logistics businesses are involved in actively testing some of the latest transportation technology aimed at reducing carbon footprint, reducing costs, improving efficiency and delivery and reliability for our customers. And so it's not a business where things stay the same for a long period of time. It doesn't get static. You know, if you're looking for a job that you can just show up to every day and things aren't ever going to change, that's definitely not the kind of company that you want to be part of. Because we're anticipating continued change, even beyond the work that we're doing. And again, we're trying out the latest technologies, some of which have never been utilized to deliver goods ever before. In fact, we ran a vehicle that was designed by a company called Hylion out of Austin, which is a fully electric vehicle with a natural gas generator on board. And we, last month, had the very first active load delivery for this vehicle ever. Mm-hmm. And that architecture and that type of vehicle had never done that before. And so there was an element of risk. Certainly, there are a lot of safety elements that we had to take into account, a lot of issues from a legal and a logistical standpoint, and from a liability standpoint. We had to have everything squared away with our insurance. And then there was a big marketing component as well, because both our company and Hylion, our partner company, were very interested in getting the word out there that this type of work is being done, that these types of vehicles are available, and the specific impact they can have in terms of reducing carbon footprint in a magnitude that's currently unavailable.
Hmm. Now, this is probably related, or it could be, when I was looking into to you, there's one word I could have, of course, Googled it, cryogenic. What is that, and what relationship it has to do with what you're doing?
Yes, so our cryogenic logistics company, Texas Gas Transport, has been around since 2015, and I was one of the co-founders of that company. And so what we've done historically is we've transported cryogenic liquid gases, liquefied gases, and also compressed gases, so that includes hydrogen, helium, nitrogen, oxygen, methane, and argon. Mm-hmm. And so what you do with these gases is to be able to transport them in larger volumes, you liquefy them by bringing them down to very, very cool sub-zero temperatures. So for the instance of hydrogen, you're 400 degrees below Fahrenheit, mm-hmm. Which is among the most, but most of the other gases are somewhere between minus 100 and minus 400 degrees. And so as you can imagine, there's a lot of energy involved, a lot of specialized technology involved, and the technicians who actually move the gases from the offing sites to the transportation vessels and then to the end users have to have very specialized training, very specialized equipment, and they have to have a lot of experience to be able to do things successfully. And so it's a very challenging, very labor-intensive business that needs to be managed very carefully. During COVID, we transport a lot of oxygen, which was critically important, of course, because there was a big need for oxygen at the hospital systems. Currently, we're transporting a lot of hydrogen. I'm sure if anyone's been reading up on current politics, you'll know that hydrogen is a very big piece of the Inflation Reduction Act that's being proposed right now. It's believed to be a very important piece of the footprint of the potential solution for really reducing our carbon emissions and potentially getting to a carbon neutral status, achieving our climate accord goals. Hydrogen can be used in a number of different uses. Fortunately, in Texas, we're really on the cutting edge for hydrogen because we have two major rocket companies, Blue Origin and SpaceX, that utilize tons of hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And we've delivered to both of those companies, SpaceX in their original location in McGregor, which is about an hour and 45 minutes from our headquarters here in Dallas, and more recently in Boca Chica, which is on the very southern tip of Texas on the coast. Mm-hmm. And then Blue Origin is a little bit outside of the Midland-Odessa metro area, and so we've delivered hydrogen there as well as liquefied natural gas, methane. And then hydrogen can be used in a number of other industrial processes, and then, of course, it's being looked at as the future of, or potentially part of the future, for transportation fuels. And so there's a ton of hydrogen infrastructure in California, a number of metro buses and other municipal government-related vehicles run on hydrogen. Toyota has invested significantly in hydrogen infrastructure, and of course, Toyota North America is headquartered here in the Dallas area, and so we have frequent conversations with them about furthering the natural gas and the hydrogen infrastructure, because of course, the easiest way right now to get hydrogen is to use a steam reformer, where you take natural gas and you strip the hydrogen from it. You essentially get CO2 and you get hydrogen. And right now we have about 70 million miles of natural gas pipeline in the United States and essentially zero of hydrogen. So of course, if hydrogen is going to be the future, there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yes, yes. Now, when we come back, we're going to do a little pivot. You talk about being successful in this particular field, in this particular space. And obviously, it takes a lot to be successful based upon what you're telling us. When I'm back, can you just pivot that to a person? What makes you successful? What will make me a more successful person? We will be right back.
Along the journey, we stop at intriguing places and meet fascinating people with novel solutions to some of life's tricky questions. And we play a few games and track the remarkable characters of three classic books, A Soundbite Life, Flight of the Fused Monkeys, and Illicet, A Time to Begin Again, all of which can be found on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
I'm back with Sean Zady and a new father with a beautiful daughter. I'm going to ask him some questions about his daughter or about his relationship as a new father in a while. But right now, we just want to pivot on the personal level in general. I see you as a successful person, so I would want to know what it is that makes a person successful, whether in business or in life. Tell me about that.
Sure, Neville. What makes a person successful? Well, that can be a long and complex answer with a lot of different factors. But I'll say the one thing that has contributed most to my success, and granted, I'm not successful all the time, but what has really led to my success is persistence and grit. Because anyone that's successful anywhere, I guarantee you that they've also not been successful, that they've had failures, that things have gone wrong. The only way to grow and to get to the point where you can be successful is to endure failure, to push the limits, to test. And certainly in our company, we do that. You know, we have several failures. We push the envelope. We're always trying to get better and to improve. And I feel like that's reflected in my own personality. I'm always trying to improve and to get better. And part of that is failure. It's you know, maybe your company is not successful every week or every month or every year. You know, maybe you lose money, or your investments don't go well, or there's something that you want to achieve that you don't achieve. And the most important thing for me has been to, when I don't get the thing I want, or I don't achieve the thing that I want, or things don't go 100% the way that I'd hope they would, is that I get back up again, I regroup, and I figure out a way to get better or to improve or try again over and over and over again, sometimes many, many times. Now, of course, it's not, doesn't make sense to continue to slam your head against the wall. I'm not encouraging that, but to be strategic, to think, to reflect, to make changes and to adapt. But ultimately, all of that comes back down to persistence and to grit. Because I can guarantee you there's things that are still a work in progress, that are still not 100% successful in my life. And Neville, you mentioned my daughter, and she's learning new things every day, which is wonderful. But I sometimes see her get frustrated. And the thing that I try to instill with her also is to keep at it, to be persistent, that everything that's good, that's worth doing, takes time to get successful, to get better. And if you are persistent, the rewards will be there. One of the challenges that persistent people will face, and certainly someone like me who's impatient, who wants to win, who's competitive, is that you may forever feel a little bit dissatisfied. And I certainly would not encourage that, because I think satisfaction is a very important element of success. And recognizing success, celebrating it, but having a little bit of dissatisfaction and an itch to get better, to understand that things are not static, they're not fixed, they don't necessarily have to stay the same, or will stay completely the same, that's part of it too. And so if you're persistent and you have things that you want to work towards and you keep at it, I think ultimately that will lead to success for anyone, depending on what their definition is.
Now, I find that very useful. And I think I hear this in what you say. Can you tell me if I'm on the right track? So, in a sense, failure is a part of the cycle of success.
Oh, 100%.
Right. So, rather than see it as something, as you said, you fall and you get it back again, right? But you recognize that it's a part of the process. I kind of like that, all right?
Yeah, I mean, almost every time you fail, it's not the finale. It's not the very end. Right. There's always more that you can do. There's always a way to get up and to regroup. Mm-hmm. And maybe one door closes, but there's always multiple more that open up. And so to be able to see that out of failure, you can have potential success. Again, there may be things you want that you don't get, but almost all the time, if you're persistent and you keep trying, you can get those things. It may not be exactly when and exactly how you want them that very first time. And so you need to be a little bit malleable, or at least I'd be encourage some flexibility and not being too focused on a specific outcome at a specific time, because that will lead to a lot of disappointment. I mean, unfortunately, not everyone can get everything they want all the time. But certainly, if you do try really hard, I can guarantee you that for the most part, you can get what you want in time, with the appropriate effort and persistence.
Awesome. We'll be right back. Well, Sean, to be able to do all that you do, you must have built a lot of relationship and, of course, fine leadership with the company that you have. What are the skill sets or what it is that makes for good relationships and leadership? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into to good leadership, but I think that relationships are actually probably the most important thing, especially when you have a company with a significant amount of employees. And certainly we're small on the grand scheme of things, but we have over 300 employees now, and that's 300 individuals with hopes and dreams and lives and priorities. And part of being a leader is supporting those 300 individuals who you employ. In fact, that's my leadership style, and that's what I strive to do on a daily basis. Is I look at it sort of like an inverted pyramid where everything trickles down towards me, and my job is to just kind of keep everything afloat. And so it involves a lot of managing personalities, a lot of communication, a lot of listening. Certainly, I'd say both in terms of leadership and relationships, listening is the most critical skill, and it was certainly not one that came naturally to me initially because I've always liked to talk. I'm a gregarious person, outgoing, an extrovert, and so certainly that helped me to interact with numbers of people across a variety of different interest areas, and I have a lot of interests, so I've met a lot of different people, but really developing relationships and developing meaningful relationships requires support and time. And most importantly, listening and hearing and helping those who you're talking to in relationships with feel heard, feel understood. And certainly, they may not be looking to you to be a problem solver or to address all their questions. Sometimes in leadership, that is the case. But in relationships in general, I think it's more about just being there for other people and making it clear to them that you genuinely care about them and you care about their interests, which... Fortunately, I do. I'm a very curious person. I just love hearing about other people's stories. I'm certainly happy to share my own, for instance, being on this podcast. But ultimately, I the way that I develop good relationships is I just get out there and I like hearing what people have going on. I like to ask questions. I'm a very inquisitive person. I think that being inquisitive is a good thing because that's a good way to learn, but it's also really a good way to be able to set yourself up to listen and to establish relationships and ultimately to help or assist people. Not that, again, you need to be their problem solver, but it's just a good way to be a sounding board. And for me personally, especially in leadership, I already know what I already know. What I need to learn and the way that I can address problems is to go out there and hear more perspectives, to gather more data, and to assess the situation, and the only way to do that is to hear from others. And so again, that all boils back down to listening.
Awesome. That's good advice. Let's talk a little bit about life. Right now, we live in a very complex society. Some people might say chaotic, some people might say a controversial society. And I'm talking globally. I'm not talking about our community alone. What would you say is a skill set that is so necessary for us now in these particular times?
Sure, it's certainly a unique time to be alive, one where information has never been so readily available, and yet there seems to be a lot of misinformation, and there seems to be a lot of confusion. And I would say having true, genuine curiosity is one of the best ways to navigate the world that we live in right now, because there is so much information out there, and I by no means suggest to incessantly go through information, because I think that's a futile exercise. There's always going to be more information that any one human being can process in a lifetime. But having genuine curiosity about the things you hear about, the things you read, a willingness to question your ideas, to change your mind, and that really all, to me, is encompassed within curiosity and having a curious mind. Mm-hmm. Asking why things are the way they are, how have they been historically, what could happen in the future. That's all part of curiosity to me. I think that certainly with the things we've mentioned previously, perseverance, listening, And if you tie in some curiosity, you've got a pretty good recipe for navigating the world that we're in right now. And unfortunately, too many people are subject to confirmation bias. They just are looking for answers that are the way they want things to be answered, that confirm their beliefs, that are exactly what they want to hear. And that's not being curious. Being curious means I'm willing to go out there and look at what's being said and dive a little bit deeper, and not just read superficial headlines or arbitrary articles depending on news source, but to really do the research, to look at the warrants, understand why people are saying the things they're saying, what is really being said, to look at data, to look at reasoning. And I think that that's a really rare skill set nowadays, because again, it's so much easier to just casually peruse information, to make up your mind about a certain thing or a certain set of beliefs, and to never change it, and to only seek out news sources and information that agrees with the things that you're already hearing or what the people you're around are already saying or doing. And being able to cut through that all is really critical in this society, to be able to address the chaos and the conspiracy and the complexity, and to really carve out meaningful, valuable, well thought out opinions about things. Because certainly objectivity is very difficult. In fact, some would say unattainable in most situations. And the goal is not to be the objective, to be the definitive truth. It's to carve out the most well-reasoned opinions that you can come up with, and to continue to try and improve and get better. I think that that's really the way that you do achieve success, and is to successfully navigate the information in front of you, and to really tease out, well, what does make sense, what is valuable, what can I learn, what can I change my mind about, and then from there, just continuing your journey.
Awesome. Well, Sean, talk to us about your daughter.
Yes, having a daughter is definitely a life-changing experience, but it's been wonderful. She's almost 14 months old now, and I honestly hardly can remember what life was like before her.
Oh, already?
And not that I would even want to go back to that, because it's been such a wonderful experience. The look of pure joy on her face when she wakes up in the morning and you come get her out and get her ready for the day. Her silly sounds and running around and reading and learning. It's just a life-changing, wonderful experience. It is challenging. There's definitely a lot of grunt work and a lot of mess, whether it's diapers or food being all over the place or just other random messes that a little baby makes. But it's truly a unique and wonderful experience. Certainly for those of you out there who are considering being parents one day, I would highly recommend it. And not that I have anything against anyone who doesn't want to be a parent, but I do say that it's one of the unique and most rewarding experiences that a person can have in life is bringing new life into the world and helping it to flourish. Because, and certainly I knew this coming in, but a baby that comes into the world, it's not really like any other animal on the planet. They're completely helpless,
right?
They can't move, they can't eat, they can't talk. They really can't do anything initially. And so maybe we're just biologically wired that way to truly care about our offspring so that they can survive. But when she came out, I just felt that strong desire to support her in any way and any endeavor that she may go through in life. And granted, the things that she's done are relatively modest by human standards in just the first year of her life, but I think she's grown tremendously and that she's developing a personality, and it's just really exciting to see and to be able to support her on her journey and to help her develop as a person. That's a big challenge, but it's one that I'm really excited about.
And I want to ask you a question about a challenge, because knowing you, obviously, I know you pretty well, and the joy that you just express, you see it all the time with reference to your daughter. But it must be a big challenge. You you do so many things. You run a company. You do a lot of not only corporate stuff, but you do stuff for the community. You know you're involved with other, you know, obviously I know other stuff that you do. How do you manage the challenge of raising a daughter that you're so joyful of being around and doing all this other thing?
Sure, it's quite the balancing act, right? Because when she's smiling at you first thing in the morning, the last thing you want to do is get in your car and go to the office all day and be gone for 10 or 12 hours and then barely get to see her in the evenings. But, you know, it's important to recognize that, you know, I'm still a person, or a parent is still a person, and you've got hopes and dreams and goals and objectives, and you've got to continue to set aside time to be able to do those things while still giving the time to your child to help them to develop and to build a relationship. And certainly I've had to get more concise with some of the things I do. I've had to move a little bit more quickly, but also, you know, it's about making choices and setting aside time. I mean, my number one priority is my daughter. And so even though I do have other interests and there are things that I need to do, such as run a company or serve the community that I think are really important, and part of those are things that I want to model for my daughter so that she can be successful too. So it's not necessarily a complete trade-off between going to work and seeing my daughter, because I want my daughter to see that going to work, leading a company, supporting individuals, creating jobs, those are great things that you could potentially do. I certainly don't want to force my daughter down any specific pathway. But I'd like to make as many opportunities and pathways available to her should she choose them. I have to remember that she is a separate being from me. We are not one and the same. So, you know, my goals and my hopes and dreams and things that I like are not necessarily the same as hers. Although we do, of course, share 50% biology and a lot of specific character traits. And so I'm really curious to see how she develops over time. And certainly I see a lot of myself, which is very exciting.
We all do.
But, you know, at the same time, she is herself. She is her own unique being and person. And so getting back to that balance, I think part of it is that I do need to give her time away so that she can develop and she can experience things and learn and develop relationships. And so I also see that as part of the equation. And so I know that it's important not for me to be there all of the time. I don't want her to become wholly reliant on me. I would like her to be an independent person. But it's not easy. I mean, there's no 100% tried and true way to manage your time between work and personal and other things and family. But it's just something that I'm continuing to calibrate and to improve. And I'm taking, you know, my three characteristics that I've mentioned earlier, you know, listening, persistence, and curiosity, and applying them to my parental role and to my relationship with my daughter to continue to improve it and to get better.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. When we are back, Sean is going to play our famous game.
Are you ready? It's time for Three Hands and a Deep Hole.
Earth is in a crunch, caught in a vice-like grip by the desires, determinations, wants, and intentions of three superior forces. And some groups are under severe attack. But all is not lost. Well, for some, actually, there is no hope. They are completely lost, blinded and dumbfounded by toxic smoke and twisted mirrors. They can no longer even hear the rumble. For a vast many others, though, there is still much hope. One might even say they are on the verge of experiencing that remarkable ah.
Yeah, yeah.
However, the sage did say a very wise and prophetic thing that warrants heeding.
Everyone living long enough will slip and fall into a deep hole. Three hands will appear. The hand of a hustler, the hand of a riddler, and the hand of a clown. Choose wisely, or you will be buried.
Which hand will you choose?
Hand will you choose?
So I've got three hands in front of me, a riddler, a hustler, and a clown. And my approach would be first to rule out the ones that I'm not going to choose. And so my initial inclination is to not choose the clown, just because I value hard work, and I value intellectual curiosity, and my general feeling is that a clown does not have those specific characteristics. Additionally, I'm in a hole. I'm buried. I need someone who's going to be there to help me out, and I feel like a clown is just not a serious or reliable option. My second inclination is I really do feel a shared kind of mission with the hustler, although a hustler, it really can mean two things. One, a person who genuinely works hard, who hustles, who tries to make things happen. And I see that in myself and a lot of the folks that I work with, and I value that as a quality. But also a hustler can be someone who cheats you, who deceives you, and that seems like a pretty big risk to take when you're looking for someone to help you out of a hole. They could very easily take advantage of the situation. And so I would question the hustler's integrity. And for me, you know, being in a hole, I view as a challenge. And then also being a riddler, I think, is someone who issues challenges, whose life revolves around challenges and puzzles. And if you can work with that person, or you can address those questions, or be successful in solving a riddle, then I think that's someone that you could potentially rely on. And so that would be the person that I would choose, is to go with the Riddler.
So Mr. Sean will choose the Riddler.
It is indeed a pleasure having you, Sean, on the journey. Thank you so much for sparing the time to be with us.
Thank you, Neville, for having me. I hope that the audience found this conversation valuable, interesting. And I just want to encourage everyone out there on their journeys. And also, if anyone has any questions or wants to follow up, please feel free to reach out to me. And I'm sure, Neville, you can give my information out there to make that available.
I certainly will. It is a treasure having you. I'm so glad, man, if your time is valuable and that you were willing to come and share it with us.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you so much.
The Journey is available free on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Rio Sports Radio, and several of your favorite internet platforms. Download, embed, and share via any of the social media you love.
Sean Zaidi, President, NGV Global Group. Sean is spelled S-H-A-N. His last name Zaidi, Z-A-I. His company website is ngvglobalgroup.com. You could also find Mr. Zaidi on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Instagram, his handle is SYZAIDI. Or contact him through The Journey on thejourney.riosports.com. See you next week.